Welcome to the Andy Staples Show, again presented by Sling. You may have noticed over the weekend that logo was not appearing on the show, and there was a problem. Sling had gotten into a carriage dispute with Disney. Disney wanted X amount of dollars. Sling wanted to pay X amount of dollars, and they couldn't come to an agreement when Disney's contract expired on September 30th. And Sling, which had been advertising on this show that you could get all of the college football that you want, did not have any of the ESPN channels on a college football Saturday. And I know how frustrating that is for you. It was very frustrating for me because Sling did not communicate to us that this was going on and did not let us know that this was even a possibility. But they're going to try to earn your trust back. They've got the Disney channels back on. So ESPN, Disney, all of those channels back on Sling. And they're going to continue as the presenting sponsor of this show. So you have the option to give them another shot if you'd like. I understand if you're frustrated. But that is the situation. And we are going to get on with a great show on location in College Station, Texas. Ari is going to learn to yell, and you're going to love it. On to the show. Greetings from Aggieland. I'm here with Ari Wasserman. It's been quite a day already, Ari. We first stop in your tour to SEC. We're going to start here. We're going to wind our way through SEC country. We're going to wind up in Tuscaloosa at the Texas A&M Alabama game, which we circled on the calendar in May for very different reasons than I think we're interested in it right now, which I think is fascinating too.
There were moments in time where we're like, uh-oh, did we pick the wrong game? And then it turned out we picked the perfect game.
Oh, yeah.
For different reasons.
There's drama
all
over the place in this game. And you've got, you know, the Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher thing isn't gone. It hasn't gone away. But you know, we went to Jimbo Fisher's press conference on Monday. He got one question about it. He said it's done. And everybody moved on from it, not because, hey, we think he really believes he and Nick Saban are cool now, but there are much more pressing issues at Texas A&M as they come into this game 3-2 in real danger of coming out of this game 3-3. And I got to ask you this. If you owe a guy $87 million or whatever it is, $85 million, there's nothing you can do. Like, he's not getting fired. It's not happening. And you aren't happy with the way things are going in year five. As a fan, as a supporter of the team, as a, you know, administrator, what do you do? How do you handle that?
Yeah, I think that the only thing that you can do is accept it. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to compare this to what I'm going to compare it to, but I guess I will.
Oh, okay.
But if you're, of course you will. If you're in prison and you have a 20-year sentence, yeah. You know, in year one,
if you don't like the food, too bad.
It's like you eat the creamed corn and, you know, you kind of move on. Now, saying that, you know, rooting for Texas A&M, this house is a prison. No, it's but
yeah, I don't, you know, I don't just think like, they were thinking that when they signed that contract.
We were talking about this earlier today, Andy, and I think it's kind of the crux of the issue of, you know, what is Jimbo Fisher going to do to fix this offense and to fix the situation he's in? And I don't know that we've ever seen, and you know this stuff better than I do, but seen a coach that is in this type of quote unquote hot water without really facing any danger of paying any repercussions for that.
There's no danger whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, you just watched Paul Chryst get fired when 2 weeks ago you'd have never thought that would happen. There is no chance.
Jimbo Fisher could have walked into the press conference with a shirt off and a cigar in his mouth and it would have been fine.
Exactly. Like that, and it's fascinating because they did put themselves in this situation. Now, the current administration, Ross Bjork didn't hire Jimbo Fisher. Mm-hmm. It was Scott Woodward, who's now at LSU, who signed into that contract. But they did extend him last year.
They did.
And that tacked more on. Now, even if he was still working off the initial contract, he's not fireable. And again, I don't think anybody at Texas A&M wants to think about that. They just want him to get them in contention to win SEC titles, to get them in contention to win national titles. But they're not. And it's interesting because a lot of the questions to the A&M players today and to Jimbo Fisher were about what happened last year with Alabama, where they entered the game in a very similar situation. They had just lost. Yeah. In that case, they just lost to Arkansas and Mississippi State. In this case, they've lost to Appalachian State and Mississippi State. The offense was sputtering. her quarterback injuries that they were dealing with. All this sounds very familiar. But what happened in that game, Zach Calzada, then Texas A&M's quarterback, played the game of his life. An offensive line that had been kind of struggling to gel came together and basically took Will Anderson out of the game. That was the worst game he played last year. Mm-hmm. And you got kind of an anomalous performance. And Texas A&M won. It was a huge moment. They rushed the field. But then you had the Ole Miss and LSU games where it put them back in 8-4 land. And I think the recruiting class and the excitement over having the number one recruiting class kind of papered over that a little bit. But now as the fans look and some of these young players are being asked to do quite a bit, like Evan Stewart is the wide receiver from that class. He's got to be their number one wide receiver with Anaya Smith out. I'm not sure he's ready for that role.
Yeah. You know, it's just like this weird situation that they're in because, Andy, I wrote 2 weeks ago in Dallas when they beat Arkansas that was a very important win for that program because it prevented the wheels from falling off.
And if KJ Jefferson does not extend that ball out,
the lug nuts are loose there. Yeah.
We're talking about a 2-3 team going to Tuscaloosa right now.
Yes, but on the same token, when you're in a position that you're in with this contract, and the fact of the matter is the coach will be here for 5 more years at the very least before anything real starts to even be discussed.
Right.
Is the best thing for the program for the wheels to fall off in order for them to make damn sure that whatever needs to be fixed is addressed. Because you look into this game and you say, well, Texas A&M is coming into this game the same exact scenario that they were in last year. They beat Alabama a year ago, and they're right back to where they were.
Right.
So, like, do we consider them beating in a alternate universe where they go to Tuscaloosa and beat Nick Saban mm-hmm. again for the second consecutive year? Is that the correction that this program needs, or do they need to go there and lose 55-0 in order for the message to keep getting pounded and pounded? It's interesting. And pounded?
This is my Oklahoma column from Monday. Like, you got to feel the pain before you can actually make the corrections. And
because that fools you into thinking it's okay.
But there's a difference between Texas A&M and Oklahoma. Oklahoma, the pain that Oklahoma has felt pretty much localized to the 1990s. You come off the John Blake era, the pain of that, you hire Bob Stoops, and that's the correction. And then you're just good from then on out. You win a national title, you win a bunch of Big 12 titles. A&M has not done that. A&M, it's been nothing but pain.
Well, Jimbo's supposed to be the correction.
He's supposed to be, but he's not. So far,
he's got the contract for correction,
right? But in year five, he's not the correction. So, right. Does this force him into making it? And that's the thing. I'm curious, and we'll be here for a little bit longer. We'll be here a little bit tomorrow as well. I'm curious to talk to some folks around here to see how they feel about that, because I feel like at this point, this was supposed to be better. And how frustrated are they that they keep winding up back in the same place.
And I have internal conflicts with this too, because we came into this year thinking this was a 9-3 team if things go well, right?
It was not. We never said this will be the year that Texas A&M crosses over, that they get put over, to put it in wrestling terms. Like they're not moving into like an SEC champion type caliber team or a national title caliber team in 2022. Nobody was saying that.
Not even people here.
But the idea was a step forward, and then next year.
And a step forward would be a 9-3 season, maybe. Yeah. Competitive losses to the giants of the SEC and offensive flashes that make you be like, well, this is the direction we're going. Mm-hmm. And really, you don't want to be looking
at defensive flashes. I mean, I think either one at this point.
I do think that the worst possible comment that you could possibly hear if you're an A&M fan, or if you would have told an A&M fan in August, we're going to be saying this on October 2nd or 1st, whatever today is, this is the exact same spot they were in last year. That's like sirens going off.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they're not dumb. They know that win against Alabama, if you play that game with all those same players 100 times, A&M doesn't win most of those.
10?
Maybe. I mean, A&M still had good players.
Yeah.
So,
but can't say zero, but, or you can't say one or two, because one out of one.
Yeah.
But I think 10% of the time, maybe.
Yeah. And that, I think that's the frustration. And there's that. There's more to this game as well, because you have quarterback injuries on both sides.
Right.
You have Bryce Young goes down. It's a shoulder injury. Nick Saban says it's not that serious. They're going day to day. Jalen Milroe came in and replaced him. And I thought Jalen Milroe looked great. On the other side, Max Johnson hits the thumb on his throwing hand. He's going to be day to day, according to Jimbo Fisher. We don't know exactly. We do have dueling sound bites from the coaches about this.
Yes.
They are spectacular. My personal favorite is the Nick Saban one.
It's a Saban rant where he punches his own chest. So
yeah. And this one's justified because you'll hear the question, but I'll set it up for you anyway. He's asked if they want to put a package in for Jalen Milroe as if we didn't all just watch Jalen Milroe run their offense very successfully, by the way, for 2.5 quarters against Arkansas.
Yeah, just run it. I've got nothing to add.
All right, here we go.
You've talked about Jalen Milroe's unique skill set. Just given that, is there a thought of maybe putting a package together for him regardless of Bryce's injury status?
We already have one, so... Do you want us to put a new one together now just because he might play or use the old one? I mean, we can do either one. I mean, I'll go talk to the offensive coaches and see.
About to use that more often, then?
Again, you know, I don't talk to Jimbo on a regular basis, but I'll call him and tell him right after the conference if you want me to. I mean, you guys think I'm going to tell you what we're going to do with our offense and our team? You might as well make it up. I saw today where there's headlines in the paper that, you know, I'm going to keep it a secret what we're going to do with Bryce. It sounded like me making right that statement. But I've never said that. But it was there in black and white. Like, so you can make up whatever you want to make up. You know, look at somebody else's running quarterback and say they should put these plays in. Think that'd be a better way to do it.
The chest bump is even better because he's wearing a Masters polo while doing it. It's the type of polo you would wear to go with your Edgewood Tahoe hat that you're wearing.
Well,
right now.
Yeah, I've never been to Augusta, but I'm sure I would buy all the merch.
You would buy 9 hats.
Yeah, maybe one day I'll go. But it's always the rant is always followed with the I don't know, the arms up. What packages are you mean the offense? And if there was a package to install.
Right.
When are they going to do it? What days of the week do you do that, Andy? Like you've been in a Division I program.
Why would you even need it? Well, you do it Tuesday and Wednesday, but why would you even need it?
I mean, just install the whole new thing.
How about you It'll just run fine. The plays you ran Saturday that works?
And also the other team's probably not going to score, so that's probably going to work in your favor as well. So.
Okay, let's talk about that other team and its scoring capabilities because, yes, that is that's the issue there. Max Johnson, we'll see if he plays. Jimbo Fisher said day to day. It sounds like Haynes King probably getting the call in this one. But of course, Jimbo was asked about that, and he's apparently been watching Nick's press conferences. Mm-hmm.
You said Max day to day. Do you anticipate Haynes starting Saturday night?
I don't know. We'll go day to day.
Go to your left there, Travis. You wrap us up.
What do you want me to do? Call Nick and tell him. I mean, guys, come on, man.
You think they'd call each other? After everything that happened?
Yeah, it would be funny if they actually did just go. Well, hey, I mean, honestly. You know
what? Guess what I'm going to do?
Well, I mean, anything to get them on the phone probably would be a good thing, right?
Do you think Nick at this point, because he does have a clear advantage going into Saturday, if he really wanted to rub it in, do you think he'd call Jimbo and go, here's what we're going to do?
Have the two men spoken on the phone since the summer?
Ooh. They have the same agent. Could there have been a three-way call involving Jimmy Sexton? Could that have happened?
Does that count? What about a one-on-one call where one coach attempted
I'm betting
to call
no.
the other?
Now, they've been in the same. No, they've been in the same room.
They have.
They had to be
a week later
together.
Yeah. After the incident.
Yes. So they've dealt with all that. It's so crazy for me to think because now, listen, I'm not going to be so kind of Pollyannish about it. We put a lot of coal in the furnace at the old Content Factory.
Yes, we did. We did. So. And it's a shame that the flame burned out. But, you know, this is, I think, to me, that's always fun, off-season fodder, talking about things, and it kind of helps us use it as a jumping-off point to talk about the bigger – because I thought that as much as we talked about that, we also spoke a lot about the issues of NIL and the way that it's perceived and stuff, and I thought it was valuable. I think this is a far more pressing and interesting issue, though, because whenever you have actual team dysfunction, mm-hmm. whether it be internally or on what you see on the field, I think that's always the most pressing, interesting thing that you can get in these games. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is that they are going on the road to Tuscaloosa in a moment where, A, you're not exactly sure who the quarterback's going to be,
yeah,
and B, we're not sure it matters. And like right. those are the two things that really kind of stick it in your craw a little bit,
especially since Anaya Smith went down. But even before Anaya Smith went down, everything looks so hard for Texas A&M's offense. It feels like everything must go perfect on every play for a play to be successful. And it's not like that everywhere. Like, you know, you can say, well, you have young guys and you have this and you have that. We watched Lane Kiffin put in an offense as a first-year coach during a pandemic when he had no spring practice and limited preseason camp that his players could run almost instantly. And effectively.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's impossible. TCU, Sonny Dykes and Garrett Riley come in this season.
They're averaging like 48.
Their offense looks amazing.
Yes.
And it's the same guys that were there last year. So.
And the thing about it too, Andy, is what is this, year five of
Jimbo?
If we're in year five of Jimbo and your excuse is that they're too young, that's on you too.
Exactly.
Like that's not like, we get out of jail free card. This is like, they shouldn't be that young.
We were looking at their receiver recruiting because Evan Stewart, true freshman, being relied upon to be wide receiver one right now. He's got a lot of talent, but it's not working out well. I tweeted the other day that has he been thrown a ball in stride since high school? Like it's always behind him. It's always, he's always got to adjust to make the catch.
Yeah.
But he has dropped some, like dropped one in the end zone. He shouldn't drop against Mississippi State.
Right.
Let's be
tough pass. Should have caught
it. Hit him in the hands.
Yeah.
So he was having to go back for it, but it hit him in the hands. That said, should he be in that position? No. Damon Demas maybe should be in that position. He got kicked off the team. He did that to himself. Some of these guys that they have recruited should be in that position. But, you know, you look at some of their top receiver recruits over the last few years, one's at Minnesota, one's at UCLA. They're not developing these guys into producing – you know, high production players at Texas A&M.
And when put in a position in the transfer portal era to fill a need, they did not do that either.
Right, because you look at Alabama. This is a prime example. Alabama had the greatest receiving recruiting class of all time in 2017.
All of them were hits, by the way.
It's the greatest recruiting class of all time.
Yes.
Period. But it was by far the best
second best. We're in Aggie land. Show some respect.
No.
It's second
until
best.
Until these guys get to the draft.
Second
they
best.
They don't
it's the greatest recruiting class. There are two different ways to judge a recruiting class. One is greatest recruiting class of all time when we figure out 4 years in the advance or in the future.
That would be a good way to see if they actually became good college football players.
But the best recruiting class going into it was last year, and I don't want to get out of this town without making sure that, you know, on a day where I learned all the Aggie traditions.
Oh, yeah.
And
by the way, you're going to hear that later in the show.
Yes.
Ari is he's married to an Aggie, and now he can speak a little bit of Aggie. We had a yell leader named Kit who, this dude is awesome. And by the way, his bicep workout must be just
Kip,
beastly.
Yeah, Kip, if you are listening to this, I hope that you will. Jacked.
He's a jacked dude. And Ari knows what he's doing now. You're going to hear, and if you watch the video, see all of that later. But
and I found out that my wife has a class ring, and it's in our house.
She has an Aggie
ring? She has a ring. Yeah, I was wrong in saying that she didn't get one.
She can interdigitate now.
Yes, interdigitate.
You're going to learn what that word means, too.
Yes.
You probably think it's something dirty, but it's not.
It's not. Well, yeah, it's not dirty.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. Before we go too deep down that rabbit hole, the class that included Tua Tagovailoa and Mac Jones also included Devontae Smith and Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs III. Jalen Waddle would come a year later. But that is a pretty spectacular receiving core. But those guys were gone. And once they left, then Alabama had to adjust to it.
Yeah, you know, and when they did, what do?
Well, they didn't exactly have, so they had John Metchie, who's great, but they didn't have a true game breaker. So what do? They went and got Jameson Williams out of the transfer portal.
And he turned out to be pretty good.
He turned out to be a first rounder.
Yes.
Now, I don't know that Jermaine Burton is going to be a first rounder this year, but they shored up a need.
Yeah.
With Jermaine Burton out of the transfer portal. They got a transfer from Louisville as well. They are trying when they don't feel like they have what they need. And is this Alabama offense as explosive as it has been in the past? No, it's not. But those receiving numbers, those passing numbers, you'd take at Texas A&M.
You look at it and you go, "This is what we're driving for."
Yeah.
So like that's the thing too. If like, is this a personnel issue?
I think the Jalen Milroe thing is a good example though. Now Jalen Milroe was a player that A&M recruited. I think they took Eli Stowers over him in that spot. And Milroe also had committed to Texas and then flipped to Bama. So there may have been a flip to Bama.
It was a gymnastics meet, let's be honest.
Yeah, it may have been a flip to Bama in the offing anyway. But you look at what he did, and this gets back to that question that Nick Saban got asked and blew up at. And listen, a lot of times Nick Saban has a rant queued up, and it doesn't matter what you ask. In this particular case, the rant was aimed at the question.
Yeah.
And it's a good reason because
that was a natural rant.
You haven't been watching Alabama if you ask that question, because Alabama's offense has all of this stuff in it. It's a Cheesecake Factory menu, essentially. But depending on who's playing quarterback, you're only using certain pages of the Cheesecake Factory menu. And then
that's a really good way to put something. I'm gonna put that in my repertoire.
What
page is Jalen Milroe?
Jalen Milroe, is he the one with the pastas and the
chicken
pasta? That's a good page.
That's a really good.
The burger page is pretty good too.
No, Bryce Young is the one that has chicken costeletta on it. Whatever page that is.
No, I think Bryce Young gives you all of the pages and dessert.
Yeah,
I think that's the beauty of Bryce Young, but. Even when they don't have Bryce Young, even when in an emergency they have to bring in a guy who's not really played very much, they get a chance to run their offense. It is they're running plays that their receivers know, that their line knows, that their backs know, and it's effective.
Yes. Yeah. Watching Texas A&M play offense is like having oral surgery sometimes.
It is.
I mean, it really is, and I'm not necessarily sure. I'm completely aware of like this isn't just like a do this one thing, and like I'm Mr. King of play the quarterback.
Yeah,
this isn't just play the quarterback and it's over. This is a multifaceted.
We can get it to Connor Wegman, but yeah, it's not a play the kid situation. Like
yeah,
it's every quarterback who comes in. It feels the same way. It feels like everybody is pressing hard. We've got to do this way. If this one little thing breaks down, if this guy messes up, we're done. We're done for. The play doesn't work.
And Jimbo, which is, by the way, Andy, football.
That is football, but there are offenses that are built to deal with certain personnel weaknesses you might have.
Sure, absolutely. But it's funny, though. It's just like if everybody does their job perfectly on a play, every place is a touchdown.
Correct.
Right? So, like, I mean, like, that's... It's like if this would have happened or this block would have been made or this error didn't happen, we would have scored. It's like, yeah, I know, but you can't say that 1,000 times.
Right.
You know, without analyzing what's going on that causes these mistakes. Is it, you know, creating an environment where everything is overly complicated? Is it creating an environment where your players are tense? Well, these are all coaching questions.
It was interesting because Jimbo Fisher came in on Monday talking about how the players just needed to relax. And, you know, he said it multiple times in his opening statement. So I asked a question about relaxing and what do they need to do to relax? Why has it been so hard offensively for them to relax? Do they look comfortable in practice and it doesn't show in games? Or
I don't think they're not relaxed. Just got to relax. Yeah, sometimes you want to try when you're young and you got young guys in critical positions that sometimes they just want to try too hard. I don't know. I mean, we talk to them every day, give them confidence. They do it in practice every day and just got to relax and play.
So, no, it's not about relaxing. He just said it like 5 times that it was about relaxing. And then
the reason why you asked that question was because you used exactly what he said.
I used the word he kept using. So that it was very strange. And I think it's a case where he probably doesn't feel like he has a ton of answers either. So... Or it's not answers he wants to tell us, or the answers are not going to sound great to anybody.
Multifaceted, complicated. I don't know that you have enough time in a single press conference to address all those things. The question that you have if you're an A&M fan is, because constantly I'm confident in what we're doing, constantly You know, it's get the players to execute better. Constantly, we have all the players on our team that we need, and I've seen it in practice, and all the coaching cliches. The question you have to know is, in, to borrow something from Nick Saban, in his heart, that he knows that there needs to be some soul searching in terms of the changes that need to happen in the program, where those need to be fixed, and does he have the temperament to systematically change those things?
Yeah.
And it's like, there might not be, he might actually believe that, hey, you know, we're a year away and that's it. You know what I mean? So if they're a year away, then, you know, you can get through the season and then try again next year, or you go into next season or the off season prepared to address the issue and eradicate whatever's going on here.
Yeah. This is the part where I think if you're an A&M fan, you just feel like you are banging your head against the wall, because they had this conversation last year and they had this conversation in 2019 and they had this. The only time they didn't have the conversation is 2020.
Yeah.
When they had a fourth year starter in Kellen Mond.
And
they still lost to Alabama by a lot.
And I came into this year thinking this would be a fun team to watch. No, I thought they would be a fun team to watch.
Anti-fun.
A team that lost, but a team that made you think like, oh man, you see that play Evan Stewart made? Mm-hmm. Oh crap. You know, maybe second half of the year, Connor Wegman, you see that dart? Like, you have the pieces in play there to be like, you know what? I want to watch this team because I want to see glimpses
or
of the
maybe
future.
It's Anthony Lucas coming in and developing on the D line and you know, getting pressure on the quarterback.
Anything that would make
Nolan
you
playing. Yeah.
Like, this whole year I thought would be like a semi preview of what that 2022 class could do. Yeah. And I'm not sure we've seen any of that. At all. You know, we've seen a few glimpses of Evan Stewart. He's their number one receiver right now.
Nothing they've done has looked fun. Even the wins have not looked fun. The Miami game was a slog.
I mean, I was at the Arkansas game. It was awful.
Right. Except for one really fun defensive play that saved their butts.
Yeah. You know, and this isn't just like I see it in practice once the light turns on. This is it. I mean, this is what we're talking about here.
And he's not going anywhere. I don't think he's going to give up calling plays. I just don't think that is in the offing. So if that's what you're thinking is going to happen, just put that out of your mind.
And your theory of what should happen or what will happen is?
I think ultimately he might make some changes. There might be staff changes. He might bring in somebody who brings other offensive ideas. You know, what probably needs to happen, if we're going to look at recently successful SEC teams, is he needs his Joe Brady.
Right.
And, you know, obviously Ed Orgeron wasn't calling offensive plays for LSU, but Steve Ensminger was. They bring in Joe Brady. And Brody Miller and I talked about this on Football and Grits. You can argue that Joe Brady was calling all those plays. I am going to choose to believe when they tell us that Steve Ensminger was still calling most of the plays, but Joe Brady was helping formulate the game plan, was giving him ideas in the booth. That sort of thing can happen. It doesn't seem to be happening with Jimbo Fisher and Darrell Dickey right now.
A&M's issue play calling or their offense?
I think it might be their offense. I think it's...
Because that's a whole different ballgame.
Right. And that's like, I've mentioned this a few times, you know, Nick Saban sending Lane Kiffin on the vision quest to go explore all the various up-tempo offenses and come back and say, here are the things I liked, here's what can be added to the Cheesecake Factory. That's when they added like 8 pages to the Cheesecake Factory menu.
I love this.
But the thing is, they didn't take away the appetizers.
Yeah, they knew what they did. They knew what they were.
Southwestern egg rolls or whatever are still there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm convinced they
can go to Cheesecake Factory? I'm starving.
We might need to. I'm convinced, though, they could line up in an I formation, you know, make one of their tight ends a fullback and run just a straight-up lead play.
I feel like that would be the cheesecake, Andy. Wouldn't that be the cheesecake or the appetizer page?
I think the cheesecake is the onside kick they ran against Clemson in the national title game. That's the Godiva cheesecake right there. So, yeah, it's a weird world in college football. And you know, I know we're kind of laser focused here because we are here, but I think this discussion probably is going to happen more in other places. Like, if Michigan State, as bad as Michigan State is right now and as bleak as things look, with Mel Tucker, I don't think you go, oh, that's it. You know, maybe this is a bad year. And if next year they're good, then you don't worry about it. If next year they're bad, you're right here. You're in this moment. Like, what do you do?
It's
Brian
like
Kelly at LSU, same thing. If that were to get that.
Is there going to be like a certain point where we get to where it's like we're never giving out a contract structure like this ever again?
I just don't understand.
It doesn't seem like a smart thing to do unless it's Saban.
I don't understand how 3 of them got given out. So
this is a contract that Saban deserves,
which he has.
This isn't a contract that you give out speculatively. This is one that you give out after results are in.
Two college football coaches that deserve this contract.
Dabo.
And Nick Saban.
Yeah.
That's it. And not even Lincoln Riley, who was very successful at Oklahoma. Yeah,
you want to get yourself, you have to be able to pull the escape hatch.
Lincoln, I mean, this is Lincoln too. Like, let's say so far they're good. But let's say they hit a snag. Same thing.
I'm trying to think of like what this would be akin to. It's like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute, except nobody survives that.
No, so, it's like jumping out of an airplane with an $85 million golden parachute. You just sink.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, because what do you think?
You just fall faster.
What you think you're going to do is you lock up the bright young star as a coach and your program is set for 10 years.
Yeah.
Like that's the idea, right?
Yes.
And it's really funny because that's a big gamble. I'm a big gambling guy. If you think about 100 mil.
Yeah.
How many coaches have been recognized and stayed at the same place for 10 years and completely built the culture of that in the last 20 years?
Not many.
Honestly, like when you think about it, like Mark Stoops is one.
Kirk Ferentz
is another.
Gary Patterson did it, but Nick Saban is a 10-year plus.
We're not
plus.
Getting past your second hand if we're counting on our fingers.
We're not.
So who's paying $100 million to take that gamble? It doesn't make any sense.
It's exactly.
Not even a calculated risk. It's kind of like throwing it out the window.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is, I guess it does keep you from making too rash a decision.
I mean, at least Jimbo Fisher won a national championship somewhere.
Yes.
I mean.
Does it keep you from making a rash decision when you shouldn't?
What's the rash decision that even A&M
you're fired. We're going to buy you out.
Could they even do that?
No, they can't. That's what I'm saying. But Wisconsin just made that firing.
You're putting yourself in a straitjacket so that your arms don't do something that you will regret.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I guess if that's the, you would think that the money would be a good enough, would be a good enough
thing. That's what the money's for. Yeah, as Don Draper would say.
Yeah. But damn. Yeah. I don't really know if I really buy into that whole thing.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Even if you're Michigan State and Mel Tucker is awesome for 3 years and then he bolts because you didn't give him this contract, that means that you had a hell of a 3 years and something that the next coach can build on rather than what they're in danger of encountering.
Yes. And so that is what you've got to deal with. So as we enter this coaching carousel with a billion jobs already open and more to come, ADs, public service announcement.
I'm going to look into the camera like we're on a telephone.
That's right. We're breaking the fourth wall here. Don't do this. The person they can fire when they can't fire the coach is you. Don't do it.
Are you Michael Myers and I'm Kanye?
Wait, no. I think I'm Kanye here.
Yeah,
but you're just looking weirdly into the camera like I can't believe he's saying this right now.
With that hard swallow because I'm like,
I'm Canadian. I don't even know why I'm talking about this. Yeah. We'll be right back after these words. Enough football seriousness. We have very important yelling to do. And that's right. It's not cheering. It's yelling when you're in Aggieland. Here is Ari learning how to hitch and how to whoop.
Be nice to me, please. Don't drag me through the mud.
How could we? It's amazing.
I think people are going to find out a way.
Here is Ari and our favorite yell leader kit from Chicago in maybe the most amazing segment we've ever done. We are here in College Station, Texas with Kip Kinnett of noted yell leader producing town, Chicago. Big five-star yell leader producing town. Kip, how did you become a yell leader at Texas A&M?
Yeah, I guess it sounds crazy, kind of just most people they come to A&M are Aggies, growing up being an Aggie, but I guess my story is a little bit different in that sense. So I came to A&M on an Air Force scholarship. That's kind of all I wanted to do and ended up loving A&M. And the second I got here, the first time I came here was actually for my new student conference where like you get oriented, you sign up for classes and all that. And it was just my mom and I, and we were like completely lost. We didn't know anybody. And it was honestly like a terrible, terrible time. I always tell the story, I failed my math placement test and I couldn't get into like any of the classes that I needed to. But during the new student conference, there's this like presentation part where the Yale leaders come out in Rutter Auditorium, and they kind of just explain the traditions. They go over all the yells and the war hymn and stuff. They tell like stupid, funny jokes, and I just remember like laughing and having a good time. And it sounds super cliche, but like that was the first time I felt a part of the Aggie family. And so ever since then, that was my, I've always thought like that'd be something really cool to do. I never thought I'd actually be here, but it was always kind of on my mind from that point forward. And fortunately, I've been really blessed. It's worked out amazingly for me, and just super lucky to have this opportunity.
Well, Kip, if it makes you feel better, I'm very bad at math.
We've established that on our show. We actually, we make each other do SAT math questions on the show. So
it sounds like y'all have some funny stories. Yeah, about that.
So now you're here on an Air Force scholarship, correct?
Yes, sir.
That's what brought you here. You had parents were from Texas or went to Texas State, right?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
And so you said, you know, it was the first time you felt like part of the Aggie family. Were you aware of the Yale leaders? Were you, I mean, obviously everybody knows the football team, mm-hmm. but how much growing up in Chicago were you aware of the Yale leaders or some of the other traditions of Texas A&M?
Yeah, not at all, really. I had a cousin come here and a few of my aunts and uncles, but we never like talked about A&M really. It was kind of just never brought up. I always thought I would probably apply here just because of those relationships, but literally, I knew nothing about A&M or the Corps or the Yale leaders. I showed up day one, and I guess I got really lucky because it worked out amazing, but I knew, like, close to nothing coming in, so that's kind of just crazy.
You know, like, when we got here, like, on the way in, I was like, the person we meet today is going to be, like, from a family lineage of A&M people who, like, grew up dreaming of being a Yale leader. And like you,
it's gonna be like the Matthews family, yeah, you know, playing offensive line here.
And Andy walks in and goes, "Where are you from? Chicago?" I was like, "Oh, okay, that's not what I was." But
if you talk to Nathan, he's one of the other senior Yale leaders, and that's his story. He's a third generation. Yeah. His middle name's Kyle after Kyle Field, but that is very different from me.
So just take me into the what it is, like because you were explaining the SEC to me this week. Mm-hmm. Like, what is your duty? Like, in your vision, like what is it that you think that your role is for this program, the students, the university, and everything, you know?
Yeah, so I guess like the mission and goal of the Yale leaders is to promote and perpetuate Aggie athletic spirit and tradition. And we do this like in a number of ways. Obviously, going to football games, Midnight Yale, those are like the super obvious ways. But we also go to all like the women's soccer, women's volleyball, men's and women's basketball. And we travel to all the home and away football games. And not only athletics, but we also do a lot of like new student orientations with Fish Camp and freshman conferences, Aggie Moms Clubs, Coaches Nights, literally so much else that is outside of athletics. And so I guess like the goal of the Yale leaders is just to be a visual representation of the Aggie spirit and be welcoming to all Aggies and just like give them an opportunity to take part in A&M and show them what A&M is all about.
But but you do it almost in your own language, and you have your own like. And you're gonna teach Ari some of this stuff. So he's got an Aggie wife. He needs to learn to communicate better with her. So, but
can you help me communicate with
I'll do my best. I'll do my best.
Help me communicate with my wife, please.
but I mean, it is fascinating to watch because when I've seen you guys during the games, I don't know what's going on. I don't understand what's going on. And I've watched Midnight Yell on YouTube just to kind of try to get a sense of it. But I did want to ask about Midnight Yell because that's fascinating to me. You're standing there talking to 40 or 50,000 people. Mm-hmm. You're telling jokes. You're talking about the corny jokes that the Yale leaders told when you first met them. Like, are those passed down? Do you workshop those at open mic nights? How does that work?
Yeah, so the fables, it's called a fable. So the fables that we tell at Midnight Yell, it's a junior gives one and a senior gives one. And they're made up stories. They're jokes we find online that we like morph into stories about the other team. There's some ones that have just been passed down that are just funny that you use every year and stuff. And so we actually write them, we change them depending on the year and what's going on. But yeah, that's what it's called, a fable. And we give two of those before every football game.
So those are the ones that I was watching on YouTube for 12 hours last week?
Yes, those are the ones we also get made fun of for a lot, but that's just by people who don't understand it.
Let me ask you, Kip, is it hard being in the video when people are making fun of you because they don't understand it? Like, what's it like to be in this position? Because, you know, like I went to the University of Arizona, he went to Florida. You know, it's different from other places, you know, and I think it's an honor and something that's incredible that you do, but is it hard to be in your position?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it has its challenges, but when things like that on social media happen, like, I guess that's just what's so cool about the Aggie family is everybody here supports you, and you know, we don't necessarily care what everybody else thinks of our traditions. They're our own. We have like great sense of pride in that, and they're not going anywhere. We're going to keep doing them, and we love them for us and what they mean to us. And we would love to share them with everybody and explain them, but we know everybody's not going to get it, and that's all right. We're just going to do our thing. And so while there is lots of challenges with this position, you know, time management and just how busy our lives are, it's 100% worth it, and it's just an awesome, awesome position.
So you and obviously, you know, a lot of traditions, even based on what you wear, I got to ask. One, you've never skipped a curl day in the gym. how do they teach you? Is there a course when you are a new yell leader on getting the perfect sleeve roll? Because I've been working on my biceps question. And I'm hoping if I can get them popping that I can roll it like that.
Oh yeah, no, it does take a little while. It's just like technique. You just fold them up. We starch them super. They get dry cleaned.
How much starch is being used on this?
I don't know. You have to ask the dry cleaner, but it's probably a ridiculous amount.
More starch in his shirt or on my plate? What do you think?
I've seen you at Olive Garden. I know how you operate. So.
It does take a little while, but you get the hang of it, and before you know it, you can just roll them up super fast, and they'll be good to go.
All right, well, Kip, we need to have Ari. He needs like a mini fish camp.
Okay.
He needs to learn the language.
Definitely.
So let's
you know this one?
Whoop. Okay.
That's a whoop.
Yes. So right. Anything that's like good bull or going with A&M tradition or
what is good bull?
Good bull is just like a generic term that describes anything that's pro Aggie spirit, all in that general direction. So if the Aggies win, that's good bull. If people show up to Midnight Yell, that's good bull. If you know you are taking part in our traditions, that's good bull. If you do well on a test,
it's sort of like
good bull.
Prego in Italian. It could mean anything.
Yes,
you want
mean
it to
anything mean. You okay. want yeah. it to mean, basically.
Like that. All right. Okay. So I'll take your okay. mic. I'm gonna shoot
so
some more
ask
video.
One more okay. Thing, yeah. Andy, yeah. Real quick. Let me ask you this, Kip. So as I was watching these videos, there's one specific motion that I continually notice.
Okay.
And I don't understand. I tried to Google it. I asked my Aggie wife, and I hope I don't out her on this if she doesn't know. You're supposed to. But I'm going to give you the mic here, Andy. Okay. But there's a certain – you make the punchline, right?
And yes. So it's called a hitch.
Okay.
When we like that.
Yeah. What?
So I guess, like, let me back up a little bit. Like, why we pace back and forth, like, why the juniors pace back and forth at the beginning and why we pace back and forth when we talk all comes from a long time ago. There was an Aggie – and his name was Peanut Owens. And when they used to do the Yale practices on the steps of the YMCA building, those steps are like kind of small. And the legend has it that his feet were like so big that he couldn't really keep his balance. So he just started like walking back and forth and talking into the mic and telling the fable. And every time he would turn around, this is what the story says, so take it with a grain of salt. But he would like almost fall off, so he would start this like hitching motion so that he could just turn around. So that's kind of where it came from. I don't know how it evolved into what it is today, but just one of those little
traditions. There are a lot of famous peanuts in football history. You got Peanut Tillman with the peanut punch to knock the ball out when you're trying to tackle somebody. So this is Peanut Owens.
Peanut Owens, yep.
All right.
And he was a yell leader.
I've got size 9 shoes.
Okay.
So that's not going to be a problem for me, but like...
Probably not.
Like it always happens.
So we do it on like the punchline or like big words, or there'd be words in the fable, like when we say Olrock the Good Egg, who's
Olrock
like...
Olrock the Good Egg.
He's like this made up figure, just some...
But
good
Olrock's
Aggie,
like the best dude ever. Like you want to have a beer with Olrock.
The best
right?
Aggie okay. around. And so you always hitch on Good Egg and everybody will whoop to that.
Okay, so they go like...
Olrock the Good Egg and we go...
Yeah, the
whoop.
Good Egg.
Yep.
Am I doing this right?
Yes, that's perfect form, actually.
It's actually perfect
We'll
form.
See you this Friday.
I was watching it for 15 straight hours last week because like, I'm trying to understand it. You guys have a big game. We're going to see you in Tuscaloosa this Saturday, and I wanted to learn the understand that, so I'm happy that you taught me that.
Yes, sir.
So wait, all right, let's take Ari through. We're not taking through a whole fable, but let's get a whoop, and let's get a hitch.
So when you whoop,
right?
There's like... So the whoop is called is part of the wildcat, and each class here has their own wildcat, and that comes from like a long story where there was like a wildcat on campus, and the upperclassmen sent the freshmen out to go kill the wildcat, basically, but he got scared and ran away. So the freshman wildcat, if you're a freshman, you just put your hands in the air and scream A, so it's like, A. Now the sophomore wildcat, rumor has it, he went out there and like tried to shoot the wildcat, but missed all the 5 times. But the sophomore wildcat is A-A-A-A-A, like 5 missed shots.
Yes.
The junior went out there and shot 3 times and hit him once, which is why it's A-A-A-Whoop. And the senior went out there and just shot him once. Boom, dead. A whoop. And so interdigitate your fingers.
Did you get that?
Interdigitate, Ari.
Yeah,
now.
It's a big word. That way you can show your Aggie ring off when you get it one day for all the students.
Okay.
And you're going to A to the ground once and whoop up, hiking your left foot behind your right knee.
My left foot above my right?
Right behind, like right there. Yep, just okay. Like that. Should you try it?
All
right,
so we're going to... so
A.
Whoop. A. Whoop.
Perfect.
Hey,
are you making Ari a senior? You're saying he shot the Wildcat in one shot?
Oh, definitely.
Hey.
You that's may freshman. Have to do the freshman.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. Hey.
Yes, that's perfect.
Hey. Okay, and then the second one is?
Sophomores is A.
Oh. A.
Perfect. You missed all five times.
Interdigitate.
Okay. Oh.
It's two pistols.
Two pistols.
Yes.
A. Okay.
And the junior one, it's like the senior one, except you don't interdigitate because you don't have your
Aggie ring. Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yes.
I told you wrong.
Exactly.
A. Whoop. Whoop.
Is whoop down up, for the junior.
Whoop down.
Yep.
And then you don't get to whoop up
until you're a senior.
Okay, and so the last one will
kind of confusing, but if you are around all the time.
So, but you have to have an Aggie ring to interdigitate, right?
That's correct. Okay. Yes, sir.
Wow.
So this is a wedding ring of an Aggie.
That works.
So that makes me
you're in.
You're half an Aggie.
Honorary senior.
I'm an inner Aggie marriage.
You married into this.
Whoop.
Perfect.
Ooh, that was... Hitch for me.
Old Rock, the good egg.
Whoop!
Yeah, see, I'm good. I got it.
I think you're ready.
Yeah, I think I'm ready too. I think we're ready too.
Listen, if Kip for whatever reason can't perform in Tuscaloosa on Saturday, we're gonna roll your sleeves up, Ari. We're gonna do a lot of curls this week. A lot of curls. A lot of curls. So we're gonna do that, and you are gonna take over if Kip can't do it.
I think you can do it.
Yeah. If I would have known that I was gonna be next to the perfect specimen of the male species in a gently pressed, starched uniform with these big biceps, you got me out here looking like whoop. You know, like I'm just but I feel like I understand a little bit better, and I think I have a better appreciation of what you guys go through, because like it does seem to be like a Twitter sensation for the good and the bad. You know what I mean?
And that, PR is good PR. Yeah. So that's how we look at it.
This is the right
attitude. You know,
that's right. Old Kip the good egg. Thank you so much.
Kip the good egg.
Of course, absolutely. Thank you guys.
We're back. Thank you so much to Kip.
Whoop whoop.
For putting Ari.
Whoop.
Putting Ari through that. And listen, I'm just trying to think, whoop. Jobs in college that require you to talk to 40 or 50,000 people at a time, like they have to do at midnight yell.
Well, tell them what you told me about the camera angles, because I think it's a very important
point. Well, yeah,
I was
talking to somebody who is from here and understands this very well. And so those midnight yell videos have become popular on YouTube and people make fun of them. If those videos were shot from behind the yell leaders, it would be a totally different vibe for the viewer.
And understanding what's going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there are, like I said, 40,000 people that they are facing, and they are all acting in unison and following along and having fun. And they are like, the bars empty out here the Friday night before a game because people go to midnight yell. They don't do that anywhere else. It is fun. And, you know, my thing about this is people make fun of what the Aggies do, and they make fun of what Auburn fans do, or they make fun of what Texas fans do, or the Oklahoma State fans with their paddles, or, you know, all these different things that people do. I love that everybody has their own thing in college football. I think it's annoying when every Big Ten fan base thinks humming along to Seven Nation Army during a game constitutes a tradition. Like,
yeah,
I like when everybody's got their own. The whiteout at Penn State is so cool. The checker of the stadium at Tennessee was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, so you know, I think the more of this and the more uniqueness there is in this, this is not the NFL. It's not piped in the same Imagine Dragons song over and over. This is what makes this fun.
Yeah, I will say, you know, as you guys all know, my wife went here, but I've only driven through here. This is my first time actually spending time here. And we were on one of the main drags of the university, and Kip, who was teaching me how to do that, multiple people stopped and said, "Hey, Kip."
Everybody.
Everyone's like, "Hey, how you doing?" Like, people went out of their way to be nice. You walk into the student union where we ate lunch, no hats. And everybody, you know, jokes about how weird this place is, but like, it's charming. I really like it. Like, I honestly, these people are very nice. Well, and
you know, the thing that I, just to piggyback on what you said, is that like with such our temperament as people to make fun of things that we don't understand or that we're not a part of.
Right.
And what you have to look at when you look at what Texas A&M does is stuff that they've done for 100 years.
Yep.
The people who do it know it's different. The people who do it are just like us, but it's just what they're taught to do when they come here.
You heard Kip and, talking about it because Kip is – that was what I found most interesting. I assumed when we met the Yell leader that we were going to do this with, it was going to be like a fourth generation person who grew up in
– too.
Grew up in Katy, Texas, or grew up in Grand Prairie or something like that, and their mom was an Aggie and their grandpa was an Aggie. No, he's from Chicago.
Yeah, I was Chicago.
So this was all, but I think the way he came to that and decided to become a Yell leader was really interesting because meeting the Yell leaders was the first time he felt like a part of the campus community.
Yeah, you know, and being able to talk to him and his temperament of what's it like to be relentlessly made fun of.
Yeah.
And his viewpoint of how to handle that I thought was great. You know, and just
if you got guns like Kip,
yeah.
Ain't nobody making fun of you.
Yeah, yeah. No one's going to make fun of this guy to his face, but, you know, it's just, it's, I just think that it's different and people don't like different. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, the thing that we love about college football is packed stadiums, mm-hmm. big time programs, yep. all the things that this place has to offer, and they might do it a little bit differently. The hissing thing is a little off kilter, right? You know, it's different, but that's their thing. The same way that each and every one of the people who listen to this podcast have a thing.
Yeah. You have a thing at your school that you love, you know, the school I went to, it also has a between the third and fourth quarter song that they sway to, but it's a little bit different song. It's We Are the Boys of Old Florida instead of the Aggie War Hymn. And now they've added I Won't Back Down by Gainesville native Tom Petty. You know, if you go to LSU, you're waiting for that band to play Neck, you know, and that's not even an official tradition. That's just one they tacked on that's just fun. But I love that part of it. It was funny because we were talking to Kip after we got done. This will be his first time doing a game in Tuscaloosa because the last time they were there was COVID. And so I said, you know, just make sure you're somewhere on the field about 30 minutes or so before the game mm-hmm. when they play Sweet Home Alabama.
Yeah.
Because it's just like the first time that guitar riff starts.
I'm excited. I cannot
believe I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm excited. I mean, that's one of the most exciting things that, you know, I've encountered in my career, being able to experience that for the first time, you know, and yeah, I just feel like coming here and people are like, they want you to hate A&M. They are probably one of the top five most hated programs in college football. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you come here and actually try to like take, you know, like talk to them.
Yeah.
Like we got to talk to the person who was on the videos.
Yeah.
I don't know how you leave hating that.
You can't.
Yeah.
Because they're just people like everybody else, and they have their things. And in college football, and especially in the SEC, everybody's got their things.
Yeah.
And it's sacred to me, weird to you. But when you put it together on Saturday,
what is it? It's
magic
is
what it is.
It's the perfect expression of what college football is.
It's magic. We got more of the tour. Ari and I have been to Bucky's. We're going to hit multiple truck stops throughout the South. We got a lot of stops. We're going to wind up in Tuscaloosa this week. Keep an eye on Ari's Instagram, my Instagram, Andy_Staples. He's Ari Wasserman.
Whoop.
My Twitter, his Twitter. You're going to see a lot of our travel adventures. And stay locked into this podcast because we're going to have a lot of fun. And we'll talk to you soon.
Whoop.